This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Action causes reaction.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Global financial markets are moving today after a move by the Federal Reserve Board. Policymakers announced they'll buy U.S. Treasuries and mortgage-backed securities, part of a plan to inject at least $1 trillion or more into the American economy. How's that working out? So far, not bad. The Dow, actually all the markets up at this hour. The Dow up about 0.1%, 11 points. NASDAQ up as well, and the S&P 500 up about 0.5%. European shares are trading higher today, 1-3%. Asian markets were mixed. The Fed's move is having an immediate impact in the mortgage market. From North Carolina Public Radio, here's Marketplace's Janet Babin.
If you're looking to refinance your mortgage and you've got good credit, Google Refinance. You'll see some eye-poppingly low rates. Quicken Loan site is promising 4.5%. Other sites are offering rates near record lows, too. Dean Barber with Barber Financial Group says the Fed's decision to buy up government bonds and mortgage-backed securities could help turn the housing market around.
The hope, in my opinion, that could come from this is that people can refinance their loans and we can slow the rate of foreclosures.
Barber fears, though, that lower rates won't help enough homeowners. He's also worried about the value of the dollar. It fell against most currencies yesterday in reaction to the Fed's buying frenzy. Edward Haddis is with BreakingViews.com. He explains that this cash infusion could have a good effect for a while, but
too much cash for too long will unleash a lot of inflation.
For the moment, the Fed's willing to take that gamble, with unemployment rising and consumer confidence low. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
The Labor Department reports first-time jobless claims dropped more than analysts had expected. Good news for the week, but
the real issue is that the number of people who are continuously unemployed that have been on unemployment for a longer period in time continues to rise. This is a very big problem in the U.S. economy.
Diane Swank is chief economist with Mesirow Financial. General Electric today says it expects its struggling finance unit to at least break even for the year. GE Capital opened its books at an investor conference today, a little game in the business world they're calling a deep dive. Some other big action of the day is happening on the hardwood. March Madness gets underway today with CBS televising the first round of the NCAA basketball playoffs. With the fallout in full swing, you might think marketers would be sitting on the bench. Not so much, as Marketplace's Caitlin Carroll reports.
Rebound, Arthur. Kansas can taste it.
20 million fans tuned in last year for the NCAA's championship game. But overall, March Madness has been losing television viewers. And this year isn't expected to be any different. Even so, advertisers are crowding the court. Walt Garino teaches advertising at Seton Hall University. He says March Madness is still one of the best ways to reach young, well-educated men in big numbers.
The audience is basically not only mostly male, slightly above average in income.
So Lowe's, Coca-Cola, and Nike are buying in. And there's beer.
Of course, there's a thing called the brewskis.
Foreign automakers and tech companies are stepping up their ad buys as banks and American car makers bail out. Also, lots of advertisers will be pitching their products online. Tech analyst Josh Martin says the web is a good place to find a captive audience, especially during work hours.
There's something to be said for having an active user that is waiting for the game to come back on, that can't skip commercials.
And can't bear to miss a free throw. In Los Angeles, I'm Caitlin Carroll for Marketplace.
You're listening to The Morning Report on Thursday, March 19th, 2009, at marketplace.org. There's another way the Fed is playing plumber to the fallout of the financial crisis. Today is the deadline for big investors to apply for the government's TALF program, T-A-L-F. The idea behind this one is to leave the credit markets flush with cash. Here's our senior business correspondent, Bob Moon.
You see, the credit pipeline isn't really empty. In a way, it's just clogged with loans that investors aren't interested in buying. Dana Saporta, an economist with New York's Dresdner Kleinwort, says that's getting in the way of new loans.
Banks are reluctant to make loans to businesses and consumers because they can't turn around and repackage these loans into securitized debt and sell them in the market.
So the plumbers at the Federal Reserve are pouring in a little financial draino, so to speak. Well, not just a little, up to $1 trillion worth in the form of cheap loans to big investors. The Fed's already had some success freeing up money for mortgages with a similar program. Now it aims to attract buyers for bundled credit card debt and car, student, and small business loans.
This is a way for the Fed to sort of encourage demand that would not exist otherwise.
Investors who buy that debt get a steady payout, and if the plan succeeds, banks should have more money to make more loans. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
European Union leaders are meeting today at a summit in Brussels, and they're expected to increase the EU's emergency fund for its members in Central and Eastern Europe, worst hit by the economic crisis. Christopher Worth reports.
Frozen credit markets and weak economies continue to keep Europe's former communist members unable to finance growing external deficits. But help is coming from the European Union's emergency fund. It was doubled in December to $32 billion, but even that is proving not to be enough. This month, Romania became the latest country that turned to the fund, and many say Lithuania could be next. Katinka Barish is with the Center for European Reform.
Some of the countries in Central and Eastern Europe, they had overheating economies and bubbles and lending growth from the banks that was far too fast.
Last month, European leaders shot down a request for over $230 billion in aid for Central and Eastern Europe. Instead, the EU is trying to tackle the crisis on a country-by-country basis. A decision at the summit this week could double the emergency fund for a second time. In London, I'm Christopher Worth for Marketplace.
Blockbuster is set to release its fourth quarter earnings this afternoon, after the bell. The company's weighed down with a lot of debt, and there's been talk recently of a possible bankruptcy filing. But as Amanda Aronchik reports, Chapter 11 isn't a foregone conclusion.
All of Blockbuster's bonds and loans add up to about $850 million. Chris Donnelly at Standard & Poor's LCD says they have to refinance a chunk of that by August.
What's most pressing is a $350 million revolving credit, a corporation's credit card, if you will. Blockbuster is going to face tremendous sticker shock. They're going to have to pay a lot to borrow.
With lending rates still painfully high, Blockbuster's refinancing worries are distracting shareholders. Arvind Bhatia tracks digital entertainment for Stern, Aji, and Leach. He doesn't think Blockbuster's facing bankruptcy.
Rumors of their death are perhaps exaggerated. If you think about it, this is a pretty good cash flow business.
He says the company's done a good job of diversifying into video games and online movie delivery. Blockbuster's got a serious competitor in Netflix, but recent earnings have been relatively good. And Bhatia says more people are staying home and watching movies these days. I'm Amanda Aronchik for Marketplace.
President Obama's stimulus plan may improve some workers' job prospects, but many highly skilled foreign workers in the United States are worried. Every year, some 65,000 immigrants come here on a visa called an H-1B. It lets companies hire foreigners for jobs in specialized fields such as technology or finance. But now the Obama administration is tightening the rules. People in India, which gets the lion's share of H-1B visas, are dismayed. From New Delhi, Raymond Thibodeau reports.
In India, a bachelor who has an H-1B visa can get more dowry money from the family of his potential bride. So prized are these work visas that offer a chance of winning permanent residency in the U.S. But America is hurting in a recession where more than 500,000 workers are laid off every month. And some U.S. lawmakers are demanding that H-1B visa holders should be the first to go. Those demands have touched a nerve here in India.
It's a big issue for us. From our perspective, this is looking very bad, discriminatory, biased. How you will justify this?
That's Swami Vigyagyanad, spokesman for the Global Hindu Alliance. The group's calling for a boycott of some American goods to protest new restrictions on H-1B workers. He says the program benefits both countries. It gives Indian professionals a chance to boost their resumes by working in the U.S., and it's given American companies a deeper international talent pool.
But because they are getting stimulus package, they are obliged to follow the dictate of the President Obama, which is to throw this Indian H-1 visa holder out of the job.
The Obama administration aims to tighten oversight of all work visa programs. The president's stimulus plan stops companies that take federal bailout money from hiring H-1B visa holders for 2 years if the firms have laid off American workers in the previous 6 months. That's most likely a nod to H-1B critics who say the work visa process is riddled with fraud. They say some companies, not just in the financial sector but in technology too, bring in foreign workers, pay them less, and hold down the wages of their American counterparts. It's a thorny problem. Amit Nivsekar is a vice president for India's biggest IT and outsourcing industry trade group, NASSCOM.
It raises concerns on both sides, anything to do with H-1B or outsourcing.
Nivsekar and other industry leaders here point out that H-1B visa holders represent only a tiny percentage of the American workforce. They say that if talented Indians are excluded from banking and technology jobs in America, not only will they suffer, the American economy will too. In New Delhi, I'm Raymond Thibodeau for Marketplace.
A lot of people are angry over big bonuses being paid with government bailout money. If anything, AIG has personified a corporate culture that leaves a bad taste. But does that mean we need to look at a new model for executive compensation? Let's bring in economics correspondent Chris Farrell. Chris, how do we rationalize these big salaries and bonuses in the days of corporate bailouts and government help?
Well, you know, you can't rationalize it. It makes no sense. It's a perversion of a system. Now, I think that we have a very good model for how CEOs should be paid. Think of an entrepreneur. You like entrepreneurs, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, we all like entrepreneurs. They take an idea, they take a risk, and every once in a while they succeed. And you know, when they succeed, they create jobs, they innovate, and if they want to go out and buy a Lamborghini, we say, go buy that Lamborghini. You want a jet? Go buy that jet. You want two homes? That's fine. Because most of the time, they take the risk, and it fails. And then maybe they lost their home, or maybe that 401k needs to be replenished. So there's a real balance between risk and reward. But when it comes to the nation's CEOs and these people at AIG, it's all reward and no risk.
So what kind of compensation model then works in this environment?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. First of all, I think let's just make every CEO just like an entrepreneur. So if times are good, they can get their benefits. If times are bad and they lose their jobs, they don't get the health care, they don't get the pension. And why don't more CEOs today act like the head of Japan Airlines? Now, he's laying off workers. They're having trouble. Guess what his salary is? $90,000 a year. And he stands in line in the cafeteria. That's the sort of example CEOs should be giving. Times are good. They make bets. I got no problem. But when times are bad, they're laying off people. They should suffer too.
But does the marketplace take care of this, Chris? Or is it the government? Whose plan should this be? And how does it come to be?
Well, the reason why I don't want government to be doing it is because you come up to this very real problem about one size doesn't fit all and the politics, which you just can't get out of there. But the big question I have is, at what point are the boards of directors who have the responsibility for doing this, at what point will the boards of directors exercise their responsibility? So I think there's a very simple message to the boards of directors of America's corporations. Take a look at the anger that's out there. If you don't convince the American worker that there is fairness in CEO compensation, then you know what? People are going to be angry enough. Politicians will respond to that anger, and government will do it. And that will not be good.
All right. Economic correspondent Chris Farrell. Chris, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
And share your thoughts with us at marketplace.org in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for being with us. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too.
Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.